This is Social Entrepreneur with Tyler Gage of Runa.
And so much of the mindset for early stage entrepreneurs comes down to when you get punched in the face or get the wind knocked out of you. How can you look at that as a teacher?
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, you'll hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to Social Entrepreneur and our guest today, Tyler Gage of Runa. Now, Tyler has written a new book called Fully Alive, Using the Lessons of the Amazon to Live Your Mission in Your Business and Life. What I really like about this book is it blends both of those factors. It talks about life lessons that really apply to everything, but it also tells the story with a backdrop of the frustration of starting up a business and having a board and figuring out the complexities as a young person starting this company. So in this interview today, Tyler talks about living with anxiety. And there are so many people I know that live with anxiety. And he talks about how he deals with that and what he discovered through ancient practices and diet and fasting. And just, he says it cracked him open. And I love that description of it. So here he is, Tyler Gage of Runa.
So we source a rare Amazonian tea leaf called guayusa. It's this really special leaf that's native to this tiny sliver of the upper Amazon in Ecuador. And we set out to build a value chain sourcing directly from family farms in the rainforest who grow this tea in under the rainforest canopy. And then we sell it in about 15,000 stores nationwide under the brand name Runa. We have a line of organic iced teas, mostly unsweetened. And then we do a line of what we call clean energy drinks, basically trying to change the game of energy drinks from artificial, toxic, carbonated cans to a fully organic product made from leaves that come from the rainforest. So those energy drinks are our fastest growing product.
But from a for the guayusa and the people there in Ecuador and all that, so what's the relationship there and why are you working there to do this?
So in college, I spent a few years down in the Peruvian Amazon and was exposed to, on the one side, the incredible relationship these communities have with the rainforest. For them, it's their supermarket, their pharmacy, and really their source of identity. At the same time, these communities really struggle to have one foot in both worlds. I'd frequently wake up and hear chainsaws cutting down hardwood trees. And when I tried to confront some of the men about this sort of seeming contradiction between their environmental values and their relationship to the jungle and the fact that they were cutting down 200-year-old trees, they'd always look at me and say, well, if you had a choice between cutting down a tree or not having money to send your child to school, what kind of choice would you make? And it reflects this sad trade-off whereby they don't have many effective, empowered means to interact with the globalized economy. So with Runa, we set out to provide an opportunity for these farming families to produce a product which is really the blood of their culture. The Quechua is the indigenous group we work with in Ecuador. And every morning they get up and the whole tribe sits around the fire and drinks guayusa. And it's really the lifeblood of their people. It's all grown sustainably in the rainforest. And we're basically providing an opportunity for them to support their families, make it more profitable to sustainably manage their land, and then sell a flagship product in the United States. So it's a great way to provide really the concrete income they need, of course, to support their families. And then also this cultural symbol. You know, Runa in the indigenous Quechua language means fully alive, the title of my book. And for them, there's this spirit of connection to the rainforest, connection to their ancestors, an embracing of the fullness of how they can live as human beings, both being intuitive and being logical, drawing from inspiration inside themselves and also from the community that really embodies the spirit of Runa. So when they see pictures of Whole Food shelves with cans of Runa, it's a very exciting opportunity for them to see part of their culture getting shared.
So you said in college, I went there. Well, was it part of a work study program or was it I'm going to go to the rainforest? I mean, what took you there?
Neither really. It was really ultimately feeling lost. You know, I struggled with anxiety and depression, and I'd gotten recruited to play soccer at Brown University, which was my life goal growing up. But this deeper feeling of feeling lost and out of place, and like there were deeper parts of myself that I didn't have access to, was the inspiration to go down to the Amazon, and felt really connected and ultimately very transformed by the traditions down in the rainforest. I spent lots of time studying with the elders and the healers, and felt like it cracked me open, fully cracked me open, and fully gave me strength and insight and courage that I'd never experienced in my life, and absolutely would have never started the business if it weren't for the support and the tools that I learned down there.
I love that phrase, it cracked me open. Now, I kind of have a theory that says inside of us, there's all this really good, great, sweet stuff, but we're kind of like walnuts or something. You know, it's, sometimes it just takes kind of a mighty blow to break us open so that all that really good stuff can kind of come out. So what was it about that experience, do you think, that made you feel like you had broken open?
So a couple pieces of it were critical to that experience. One was doing something that they call dietas in Shipibo, which are basically these very specific fasting rituals where you spend lots of time in isolation. You eat very, very little. You eat no sugar, no salt, no spicy foods. And then you drink these specific plant remedies that they prepare for you. And it's this incredibly potent way I found to unlock a lot of the pinch points that we experience between our bodies, our minds, our emotions, like a lot of the stuff that we all kind of know and feel, it's just beneath the surface. For some reason, this experience and this really what I see as a technology felt very effective and very efficient to unravel and just bring forward some of those pinch points and fears and traumas and things that really run us in so many ways day to day that we don't often have the ability to get into.
You know, you said one of the things that took you down there was you were experiencing anxiety. Is that a lifelong thing for you? And then did you just leave anxiety behind there? Or is that something that continues to trail you even today?
So it's something that from a young age, I started dealing with a fair bit of existential anxiety. So starting to think about death and what it would be like not to exist and just the bigger questions of this really fragile state of being a human that we all experience every day. That percolated a lot through high school and then through college, of just feeling a little bit lost and shaken and uncertain. And when I went to the Amazon and the work and the study I've done down there, it's really about transforming the relationship to the underlying factors. So often they talk about in the world of shamanism, this idea of the shadow. And it's these things that if you try and like bury under the surface, you just give them more power. So with these practices, I've been able to get under the surface and really go to the root of a lot of the fears and discomforts and really gain a certain level of acceptance and appreciation and really embrace signs of trigger or fear and then go a layer deeper than them to either uproot them and then also learn from them, to learn whatever the core message is. So to me, I feel like anyone who's a human who is in any kind of experience of growing is going to experience some sort of anxiety and depression. I think anybody who says that, oh yeah, nope, don't know what being anxious or depressed ever feels like, I don't think those people are really living at their edge. And I think there's just so, I mean, we live in a very challenged world. Hardship is very imminent in just about every facet of life. So I think being a vulnerable, open human to life, you reach those edges. And the shamanic practices and the traditions in the Amazon, I feel like value what can be learned and the power that can come from touching those edges. So it's really, it's not like an abolition of, oh yeah, no more depression, anxiety, I'm perfect, I'm strong now. It's saying it's a different framing and then a different set of tools to be able to work with those edges to gain insight, strength, and connection.
Yeah, insight, strength, and connection. That's good stuff. I see a lot of people who are, especially among entrepreneurs, I think, you know, that who need to deal with anxiety on a day-to-day basis. I'm surprised by the number of people I've run into who are entrepreneurs who are also dyslexic. Now I can't even say it. Dyslexic. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your help. thanks for playing our game. And you know, it's just surprised me. So it kind of almost feels like the people who are able to lean into the chaotic world of entrepreneurship they had to do that inner work first, right? And figure out how to manage the anxiety. Because like you said, I mean, you know, already within our day-to-day world, you know, there's AI and there's political unrest and there's, you know, I mean, there's just so many things that are disrupting our world all at once. And then when you jump in the middle of entrepreneurship, you're really jumping into a chaotic situation. So that internal work, that's pretty critical, isn't it?
Definitely. So I agree with that. And there's two pieces there for me. The first, which is what you said, that I think oftentimes people who have experienced some sort of hardship are looking for solutions and develop a certain resourcefulness and courage to then attack bigger challenges. So I think in the world of entrepreneurship, definitely in the world of social entrepreneurship, that theme plays well. And even when I look now to invest in other entrepreneurs, I find that people who have some grit, you know, there's some tenacity that you can't really just invent, you can't really just read about, that is a major sign of how people can be successful, in my view. The other piece about it is that anyone starting a business, no matter what you've been through, in addition to building something, in my point of view, it's really about developing yourself. The second you try and start a business, you're going to basically come up against every edge that you thought you could, and then every edge of yourself, first and foremost. So anyone building a business, even if it's minor, even if it's a side project, it's such a beautiful, perfect theater, if you will, to confront your own limitations and your own ego and your own challenges. So I think there's this beautiful and often underappreciated part of entrepreneurship, which is not just about this sort of 3D plot driven, what you're building and the concrete aspects of that, but the relationship to your own self, your own heart, your own way of being in the world.
When you went to the Amazon and you ran into this resource that was available, you know, this asset that was available to them, the Guayusa, how did you translate that into a business? Like you were, if I understand it correctly, you were like a liberal arts major, right?
Yeah, literary arts is my degree.
Literary arts. Okay, literary arts. So that's, I mean, nothing wrong with that, right? But you know, how in the world did you figure out, okay, there's a product here, there's an asset, let's turn that into a business. So what did you do first?
So I wrote a business plan my last semester at school with my friend Dan, and literally 2 days after graduating, we moved down to the middle of the jungle in Ecuador to get this thing going. And he studied marine bio, you know, my degree was in creative writing essentially, so we had no business experience whatsoever, literally zero. We recognized at that point we had a decision to make. We could either pretend to be business experts, which we were pretty sure would not go well, or we could lean into the only thing we knew how to do, which was act like students. So we developed, as you said, what we called a liberal arts approach to business, in that we decided that we would ask tons of questions. We'd read everything we could. We talked to anybody who would give us time. And we used that as this creative space and creative fodder to figure out how to approach these challenges, how to approach these questions, and ultimately build relationships. So in my book, Fully Alive, I talk about this idea of finding strength in vulnerability. So rather than hiding from that edge and trying to say, we know what we're doing. We got this all figured out. We said, no, we actually have no idea what we're doing. We feel really called to this, and we want to build partnerships, and we want to learn, and we want to have a rich, authentic, creative process to help this unfold. And from there, the business grew substantially. You know, we got our first big grant from the government in Ecuador. We started getting investment. We built our farmer network. We ultimately got the national government of Ecuador to make an equity investment in the business, to be a shareholder in the company.
Wow.
Which was awesome. And yeah, at this point, we support over 3,000 farming families down in Ecuador.
And you had to figure out bottling, you had to figure out distribution, you had to figure out pricing, you had to figure out labeling and promotion and just branding and just so many things. So how did you go? I mean, you were there in the rainforest, you were a student of the people that were there, you're a student of the product that was there. How did you go about turning that then? I heard you say how you got some funding. So how did you figure out how to distribute this and how to bottle it and all that?
So that core approach we took of acting like students applied not only down in the Amazon, but then when we had to build essentially a beverage company in the US, we worked extremely hard. You know, our products are very caffeinated, so that helps. and so two tools I can recommend to other entrepreneurs around that. We built really experienced boards of advisors. So we surrounded ourselves with a sort of group of elders, if you want to parallel it to the indigenous world, of people who'd been through the beverage industry, who'd been through growing sustainable development projects in South America, and leaned really heavily on them for advice. And not just, oh, yeah, I'll call you and check in and give me some high-level thoughts, but very specific questions that we were diligent and dogged to honor and respect and make real. So that advisory network was critical to help us make the right connections and figure out some of these tricky pieces. The other that we put into place was leaning into the guayusa leaf itself. You know, people often ask me in this world of sort of responsible business, how small and big companies can do that more. And I think for us, the key was being who we were. So it wasn't trying to like find some other ways to do business. It was going really deep with what we cared about. We cared about this tradition in the Amazon, this one leaf, and then learn from it and brought it into our business. So as we started building our team, we would create our own rituals and our own practices of sharing stories early in the morning before meetings and bringing some of that collaboration and communication and exchange, which is so inherent to this leaf, into our office in Brooklyn, New York. So I think that for us was really helpful to just go deeper into who we are. And I think for other entrepreneurs, not necessarily looking outside always, but really looking inside into yourself and into the roots of what you do for guidance.
So you've mentioned your book a couple of times, and so I'm a bad host. I forgot to mention it up front. but your book is called Fully Alive, Using the Lessons of the Amazon to Live Your Mission in Business and in Life. So what compelled you, Tyler, to say it's time to sit down and write this all out?
In many ways, it was parallel to the experience of starting Runa, where after graduating college, I had no interest in starting a business, but deeper down, it felt right. And I got this feeling in my heart like it was meant to be. And same thing with the book. I guess it was maybe year and change ago now. I had this feeling like there's so much depth and richness to our story and how we work and these traditions from the Amazon that we can only give voice to through the product, which is great. It's such a beautiful part of our business. You can drink a bottle or can of Runa and you really get the experience of it. And there's so much more depth there that I felt I wanted an ability to share. And also so many lessons, first and foremost, that we've learned through this grueling, brutal, magnificent journey of building something like Runa that felt right to share.
Yeah, I know that feeling of being with book, right? I know there's a book here and I someday it has to come out. And what's really amazing is you finally got to apply your literary arts.
You finally got
to play to your strengths there.
Exactly.
So something you've learned on your journey that you think you could pass on to aspiring or early stage social entrepreneurs, what's something you would pass along?
I'd go back to this idea. I could distill a bit more around some of the things we've talked about, which is fundamentally about looking at obstacles as teachers. And so much of the mindset for early stage entrepreneurs comes down to when you get punched in the face or get the wind knocked out of you, rather than developing resentment or frustration or, this just isn't going to work. How can you look at that as a teacher? What did it teach you about your approach that wasn't right? About the resources you thought were there that weren't there? About ways you were communicating that might not have been the most effective? And primarily look to extract and learn the lesson so then go forward and find a new solution. I think beyond all the practical tools and lots of specifics that are in the book, that mindset I think is so critical. And I think when you're in the weeds and you're in the thick of doing something, 18, 20 hours a day, it can get really overwhelming and really difficult and often just feel like it's not meant to be. But in my experience, the universe's way of helping you grow is often through challenge and hardship. And if it weren't for that, it wouldn't force you to dig your roots down deeper and ultimately be successful. So I think that perspective and that reassurance to entrepreneurs can be really fundamental to their success.
One question around that is, how do you know when it's a message from the universe that says, hello, you're on the wrong path? Mm-hmm. And how do you know when it's, okay, it's time for me to persist? This is that challenge I knew was going to come along. So I guess the question is, how do you know when to persist and how do you know when to adjust?
Perfect question. Perfect question. And to me, that's such a great example where, in business, obviously, analysis, the rational parts of our mind, thorough research are critical. And there's so much intuition that goes into building a business. And I think that question is such a perfect one where there's no analytical framework you could apply to answer that question. There just never is, and there's never going to be. The key for me is how to be centered inside yourself to have strong intuition. So I talk a lot about, in my journey, the experience of getting space to make sure that I can transition from my sort of mental ruminations into a more of a heartfelt place, into an embodied place, where my ability to feel those edges is infinitely better than my ability to think through them. So for different people, that's meditation, that's yoga, that's exercise, that's relationship. There are many different ways to make that pivot from just sort of analysis in mind into feeling. And I think those hard questions, those hard conversations, those difficult moments really come from an intuition and a feeling. And that's not just out of the blue. That's not some magical insight. There are very concrete things that we as people can do to make ourselves more connected to those ways of seeing and more refined in our ability to listen and really massage out what those messages are.
I love what you're saying here because you're saying two things. You're saying it's not all just feel your way through it, but it's also not all just logic your way through it. You Exactly. have to do both. You have to do your homework. You have to really, you know, work hard at your craft. And yet at the end, you have to step back, get centered, find that place in your body and make that decision from there. That is fantastic.
Yeah. That, you just summarized it very well. Larry Page has this quote. He says, "I find my intuition isn't very good when it comes to things I don't know very much about."
Yeah.
But you said it's, you know, you have to do the research and then leverage intuition.
Yeah. If people were looking for you online or on social media, where would they look?
So tylergage.com is my website, TYLERGAGE. Instagram as well, just at Tyler Gage on Instagram. And then our business website is runa.org, R-U-N-A.org. You can find information about our mission, our products, where to find them, all that. And then all of our products are on Amazon.com as well. It's a nice irony, nice connection there. easy way to pick up some products.
And a call to action. So people have been hanging out with you and me for the last 25, 30 minutes or so. What's something you'd like to see them go and do as a result of this conversation?
One of my favorite things to invite people to do is to write down five things that you're curious about. And I love this idea of curiosity because it's often where intuition lies. It's often the things that might not really make sense or be the linear solutions to some problem. It could be something professionally, it could be personal, but what are those things that you just have a little curiosity about? Whether it's a place, an idea, something to read, and just spend a bit of time with those things. And if the list inspires you to then dive deeper in one of them or all of them, amazing. But just the simple practice of what are five things I'm curious about and just think about it for a second. See what are the threads and think a little bit about what possibility, what beauty, what strength could come from exploring any of those a bit more further.
Tyler, thanks so much for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloyd.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. And while you're at it, will you do me a favor? Subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. It really helps others to find these stories of change makers who are making a difference in the world. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.